Welcome to the Capital T podcast, where CEOs spill the secrets on issues that are important to them. The podcast is sponsored by Jenny from Decipher Cyber. Jenny provides you with on-demand access to 360-degree trusted research and focused market intelligence on cyber technology vendors and service providers. It's also sponsored by Orpheus Cyber, whose threat intelligence-backed cyber risk ratings and risk-based vulnerability management products are trusted by major organizations worldwide. Today I'm talking to Billy, who's the CEO of Surefire Cyber. Surefire delivers swift, strong response to cyber incidents such as ransomware, email compromise, malware, data theft, and other threats with end-to-end response capabilities. Billy and I talk about how he founded Surefire, his journey, and what makes them different. Surefire launches now, this week, big launch. But you've been working on this for a little while. So can you tell us about that journey from deciding this was what you were going to do to now?
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much. So I joined ForgePoint Capital as an entrepreneur in residence last October to begin to explore how to create a response company within the ForgePoint portfolio. So there's a thesis that response was becoming ever more important with the increase of the volume of incidents. And ForgePoint wanted to have someone who had some experience in the field as a practitioner to help them study the market. So I joined as an entrepreneur in residence. And there's a couple of really interesting parts of that. The first was I had the opportunity to participate in the investment committee for my time as an EIR, an entrepreneur in residence. And that was a tremendous learning experience for me. So, you know, I'd been involved in fundraising in the past, but looking at it from the investor perspective was fascinating and really helpful. Just understanding what dynamics investors key in on, what types of discussions they were looking to have, and how they thought through the amounts of funding and things like that was just a masterclass for me. And I was so impressed by the team at ForgePoint and how they were so systematic and rigorous in their approach. Another aspect of my EIR experience was the opportunity to weigh in on things as a security practitioner, as an operator rather than an investor, and give hopefully a perspective that was interesting and useful to the investment committee and say, you know, these are the types of things I've seen clients wrestle with. These are the types of things that organizations are typically challenged by. This is my experience working with products like these. And so hopefully I was able to help them evaluate the deals that we saw during my time on the investment committee. And then my project of focus was working out how ForgePoint could best enter the response market. So I began by looking at a number of different companies, taking a broad scan of the market, and quickly realized that the valuation of response companies was really quite high. And through a series of discussions, it was decided that the best thing to do would be to create one. And so around the December timeframe, started putting together what would ultimately become Surefire Cyber as a ForgePoint-backed response company.
So an entrepreneur in residence role, like if we focus on that for a minute, who is that suited to?
So typically it's someone who has been an entrepreneur in the past and is brought aboard to help evaluate a certain market segment or a certain sector and to give a different perspective to the investment committee while the EIR is developing an investment thesis.
And it feels a little bit like a golden ticket, right? You get to go in, evaluate, and then build it rather than coming up with that on your own, building something, and then hoping someone gives you funding. So is it like that or not really?
I don't necessarily cast it that way. I will tell you, having been an entrepreneur in the past and a co-founder in the past, it is much easier to raise a company when you start with the capital than trying to bootstrap a company and then go get the capital. I mean, the reason why I don't fully subscribe to the thinking there is that oftentimes being in EIR can lead in all kinds of different directions, right? It may be just to help work on one deal, and then you have to go out and find something else. I didn't join in order to create Surefire. I joined ForgePoint in order to help them evaluate this market. And ultimately, it turned into this, and we'll see where that goes. But I recognize when I jumped in with ForgePoint, it could have taken a number of directions.
So let's talk about Surefire. What about them is going to be different?
Sure. It's a crowded field, and it's one that is fairly well served, in that there are a number of capable firms in the market providing the service. My assertion is that there are three things we can focus on that will help raise the level of support that those affected by cybersecurity incidents will ultimately get. First, talent is such a difficult part of any cyber domain, but I think it's particularly pronounced in incident response, and something that you and I have had a number of conversations about in the past, and I think you have a particular expertise in. And how that talent is brought together and how that is managed, I think is really important to work out in a thoughtful way. And so, I talk about there being a number of great firms. That is certainly true. I think the reality is it's very difficult to scale given how little talent there is in the market that's available. And so that leads to things like, uneven client experience, that leads to the continual driving up of salaries at a time when rates are going down. And so that talent question is really, really difficult. And so I thought by having the right partner to help me with building out the team and being very mindful of how to not just recruit, but also retain an all-star team, Surefire would be off to a good start. The second differentiator is building a platform that will do two things. One, help all the stakeholders involved in response collaborate better to share information and marshal towards the right set of decisions. So in a response, one of the hardest things to manage is that, there's a technical team of the affected organization, the executive team, the outside law firm or breach coach, there's the insurance carrier, the insurance broker, and sometimes other stakeholders, law enforcement, crisis communications experts, things like that. And it can be really difficult to make sure that the right information is being provided to the right people in the right time, in the right form to enable the right decisions. And so we have designed a platform with a key partner of ours to help us guide clients through their response. And that makes our talent more efficient as well. And I'll expand on that in a moment. But, I want us to have experienced experts using their critical thinking, their empathy to guide clients through decisions and share that information, not be tied to providing a bunch of status calls and project management updates on what they're doing. I want the discussion to change from here's what we're doing to here's the decisions that we need to think about, and here are some of the factors involved in those decisions. And so the platform that I mentioned is designed to help guide clients through the whole response. And then the other part of the platform is there have been great leaps in technology over the last 5 years or so. And so what we've done is automate a lot of the forensic acquisition, triage, and analysis to help us move through a response faster and allow our talent to focus on the critical thinking of the outcome of that analysis, right? And so when I put these two things together, better collaboration and then more automation, it allows us to better address that talent problem and ultimately improve the client experience by moving them faster through a response. Then the third piece is just being part of ForgePoint. So there's three things that I feel like we get as a member of the ForgePoint portfolio. But one that's really important in a response is the ability to leverage over 30 other cyber companies to pull through capabilities that can help an affected organization not just manage through the response, but also get stronger afterwards. And so our intent is to create a workshop with organizations who have just been through a response and lay out a plan for them to get stronger and fortify their security posture going forward. And I think having the reach across the portfolio will help enable us to do that.
I really think that that's like the companies that are in that portfolio, some of the best as well in the market. So the access to those, that's got to be exciting to clients that you end up working with.
Yeah, I certainly agree.
The people element is really interesting, like, and maybe more interesting to me from my background, but like, I'm starting to see a bit of a trend to people thinking about that, but it's still not the biggest consideration. Like, we've had a lot of CEOs on, and a couple of them now talk about how important people are and how important culture is. But I think it's really refreshing to hear someone say, that's like my key focus from starting the company, is what I do with my talent.
It's important for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, this is a people business. Bedside manner really matters. Unlike other areas of security where it might be, you know, a product company or things like that, what we do is help organizations through, and that help is provided by people to people. And we have to always be mindful of that. And so things like that empathy that I commented on earlier are really essential. And it's very difficult to be empathetic if you're burnt out. And so managing that carefully is really important. When we step in to help an organization, their adrenaline level is really high. And we have to match that. We have to show the same level of care and concern to help them through a crisis. This is often their worst professional time, and we're ennobled with the opportunity to guide them through it. And so we need to make sure that we're approaching it as ultimately a people problem with a technical dimension, not the other way around.
I don't know if you've been able to listen to one of the other episodes, Robert Choffey, who is, he runs an MSP called Progressive, and they were one of the, they were hit by the Kaseya attack last year. So he talks a lot about the emotions he felt as a CEO, like on that day. Like, it goes into real depth. And for him, it was something they kind of had thought about, but they had, you know, this wasn't something they'd practiced and had a real plan for. So like, there was a lot of, he talks about the mistakes they made, but really just that, like what you've just said, I guess, that adrenaline, that fear that you are about to lose everything you've ever worked for. Like, it's really, really scary. And I felt like, I mean, it sounds like maybe you do, but do you think in the industry people get that? Or is that like, you know, to you, this is what you do. You show up every day and do this, right? Like, how can you match that feeling of what they're going through to, you know, this is routine to you?
I mean, it is difficult if, you know, it's your fourth response case in a weekend, right? And so I think the key is having enough talented and experienced responders available to be able to make sure that when you show up for the intake, you're totally focused on that, that you're, and you have the bandwidth to totally commit to helping the client through it. And then, you know, I mentioned empathy before. This could happen to any of us. And, you know, there's all kinds of risks and crises that can affect our business. And ultimately, they affect not just, you know, our companies, but those that depend on us. They affect our livelihoods. And so it's important to think through that sometimes when a client is getting awfully worked up and at times getting awfully emotional. And I certainly understand that, right? If you're not sure if the business that you've dedicated, you know, tremendous amount of energy to building or to working in or supporting is suddenly at risk, you can very easily jump to, you know, worrying about your mortgage payments and tuition payments and things like that. And that's a scary thing. And so, you know, I think it's important for us as a Surefire team to stay mindful of that, to talk about that openly, to make sure that we are very sensitive to the emotional drain that it can have, recognizing that the nature of the work can be really consuming and chew up, you know, weekends and holidays, and try to balance that out with giving people time for a deep breath when they need it. And also just making sure that we're managing our capacity and our capability adequately.
So what are you doing on that? Like, what are you putting in place for your team? Because actually, like, it must be quite draining for them to have to go deal with emotional people. Like, that would take a lot out of me, like giving that empathy to another person. So how are you looking after them for that?
I think it's having a team first mindset and recognizing that when someone engages our firm, they're not just engaging a certain group of people or a team, but they're getting all of our firm and whatever skills we need to bring to bear to solve that for them. And that might be, 3 weeks into a super intense response, you know, swapping out the engagement manager for 48 hours so someone can take a deep breath. Certainly recognize that. And usually in the first day of response, we'll talk to a client about their ability to manage fatigue and the effect that can have on their own decision-making and things like that. And we want them to build in a schedule right away. And we'll tell them we're going to do the same thing, right? Because it's important that we stay sharp and focused and all that. But when I talk about the team first mentality, I say quite often that the two biggest sins that we can make within our team are not asking for help when you need it, not giving help when you're asked. And I repeat that a lot. Then the other dimension that comes to mind, Carla, is having a team of leaders that have been through this enough to be mindful of that and to keep an eye on the team, but also just to show up when a client is being really emotional and saying, you know, look, I understand that this is hard. We've helped hundreds of organizations through this. We're going to help you through it as well. We'll get there. I know how stressful this is, but let's zoom out a little bit. In 3 weeks, things will be more or less normal, but it's going to take a lot of those 3 weeks, but we're here to help you.
And what do you do? How do you manage your energy? Because, you know, if you show up well each day, then you're making good decisions. What do you as the CEO do?
The same things I just talked about. Right. There's many times when I will ask a trusted colleague, like, hey, I'm pretty fried. I think I need a little bit of downtime on this. One of the things that I can draw from is, you know, a few decades of experience. And that is certainly offers me a lot of perspective, but also, you know, just understanding how to take care of my stress and energy levels and what I need to do to, hopefully stay sharp and hopefully make good decisions. It's also just recognizing that I have a lot of support from my family and those around me in terms of how client focused this work is and how demanding it is.
Yeah, I feel like that's a big thing. And actually, I think that experience is a big thing as well. Like, you know, I started my first business when I was in my like early 20s. I definitely did not have the knowledge or mindfulness to know that I had to protect my own energy. I think I didn't take a holiday for 6 years, something like that. Like, actually, that doesn't make me good. I make bad decisions then, right? Like, I was sending emails when I was in labor and I used to think that was a badge of honor. And now I'm like, that was really dumb. That doesn't make you a good leader. And I think having that experience to know what actually like is good and to have then the confidence in your own ability to be able to say, I need help as a CEO is a real strength, actually.
Yeah, there's a lot of wisdom in what you said. And it sounds like you came to that lesson in a pretty difficult way. And I think that's often the case, Carla, for hard charging A-type people like yourself.
Yeah, I wish I think if I went back and did it now, I would do a lot of things differently and a lot of things better. So, you talked obviously about that, like automation and the platform, having stuff in one place. Like how is this unique? Like how different is this? It feels like it is. I've seen some of the stuff that you're putting in there. Like, how game-changing is this going to be for the IR market?
I don't know what every other firm is up to, and I don't tend to dwell on that. I recognize when I speak with carriers and law firms about how they do responses. You know, I see an opportunity to improve the way that there's collaboration between different stakeholders. And then that matched with a set of tools that are scripted together to be more efficient is something that I'm less focused on whether it's unique or not, Carla, and a lot more focused on, will it make us able to deliver a swifter, stronger response than we could otherwise? And then there's an economic dimension to this as well, right? I mentioned that the talent shortage and high demand are driving salaries up. And inflation is driving salaries up and things like that. At the same time, rates are going down. And, you know, the carriers are becoming more restrictive in terms of, you know, only using panel providers and being more, I think, more aggressive in negotiating those rates. And so there has to be a rethinking of how to deliver a great response experience to the client, while taking those you know, demands into account. And so one of the things that we can do is better leverage technology to help us deliver a faster response. And there've been just great jumps in the tech to do that. And the pricing of the tech has come down as well. In fact, you know, we host everything in the cloud. We just burst up the infrastructure as we need it. And then we scale it right down after case is done. And so we've been able to do all this with very low cost and very little development time. So this has all happened over the last, 4 or 5 months. We've been able to put this platform together, and I'm really excited about the experience that it's hopefully going to offer our clients and our partners.
Have any carriers seen it yet? I'm keen to know what they think.
We've shown it to a few friendlies, and that's true for law firms as well. And I think the response has been a good one. But as we begin by discussing, we're just entering the market now. And so I think we'll get a lot more granular feedback as the rubber meets the road versus just kind of, you know, demos and, hey, what do you think about this and things like that. I can't wait to, you know, field this properly and start operating the market. It's important to say also, there are going to be times when it's not the right fit. And, you know, a certain firm may prefer to do things a different way. And that's absolutely fine. Our job is to solve the problem, not to dictate how the problem is solved. And so we will certainly accommodate the particular situation of a client and the request of our partners in order to do that. I think there's some advantages to our default position, but having done this a number of times, flexibility is ever required.
It must be a pretty exciting time to have, like, you know, 4 or 5 months isn't obviously that long to build a platform, but, like, you know, to actually get people to see it and to go test everything that you think is right and where the market's going. Like, are you excited or are you nervous?
Well, mostly excited. And this is where I come back to having an all-star team. I mean, we've brought in people to help us do this that I'm impressed by every day. And that's been a lot of fun. And so, you know, the anxiety comes in, particularly given my own personal impatience. And my desire to, you know, have us quickly show what we can do.
I can see that. But I mean, I'm excited for you. Like, I know some of the team and, yeah, some of what you're doing. And, like, yeah, I'm very excited for you. I'm nervous for everyone else, but I'm excited.
I wouldn't go that far, Carla. I think there's plenty of room in the market. And then it also has to be said, speaking personally, I've just received such tremendous support over this journey dating back to October. And so, you know, whenever I start thinking about how I'm processing all this, the first thing that's come to mind is just gratitude for all of that and all the help I've gotten from some people that you know well, from ForgePoint, from the people that have had the confidence to join the Surefire team. I mean, that's been huge. And as I mentioned, like, that has me really excited, just the opportunity to work with this group, and also the opportunity to continue to build the team. And so, you know, anxiety is not in my top 10 emotions as I think about this, but it does show up for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about what you think is going to happen for, like, instance in general. So, you know, like, what do you see? And obviously it's hard to predict, but, you know, what do you see coming down the line from threat actors and how ransomware is going to continue change? What are you thinking there?
Sure. It's something that, you know, most people in the response field talk about all the time. And as you indicated, our crystal balls are really quite imperfect, but we make decisions every day based on what we think the future holds. I wish I had a more coherent and congruent answer, but I'll rattle off a couple of things, right? First, a big variable is what's going on in the Ukraine. and what Russia might do and all of that. And I think that's something that we're all aware of. Another is we're seeing massive crypto fraud, right? You know, we spend a lot of time dealing with a $200,000 ransom, but then $250 million is stolen out of someone's crypto wallet. You know, there are things that can be done to tighten up controls and things like that. But at what point are threat actors going to be a lot more keyed in on that? And at what point are response firms going to have more capability to help out? Another that I've been thinking about really since the Colonial Pipeline attack a year ago is we saw what could happen to the ability of a pipeline to operate when the corporate network is affected. What about more and more and more attacks on operational technology as that becomes more and more and more pervasive? And then another is data integrity attacks. So it's one thing for me to, you know, encrypt your data. It's another for me to steal your data. What if I change your data and I don't tell you how? It's not something we've seen in the wild too much. But, you know, I don't think that's something that we're terribly prepared for. So the underlying reality here is that a lot of cybercrime has three dimensions, which make it very, very compelling for threat actors, right? It can be committed with great impunity. It's fairly easy to do, and it's very lucrative. And so as long as those three things remain, I think we're going to be really, really busy.
With changing your data, what's the motivation for something like that? Because, you know, the motivation for the other two is financial.
I go after your general ledger. I change the fours to sevens and the sevens to twos. And I say, pay me, you know, in a million other things, right? I mean, I run some program to change it. And I say, pay me $10 million and I'll give you the answer key to what happened here. Right. Or, you know, I'm in your network and I threaten to change your general ledger. It's not terribly hard to imagine. And there have been incidents that sort of follow that line of thinking, but we haven't seen it on any degree of widespread scale.
Interesting. Is that harder or easier to do than encrypting?
I think it's easier to do than stealing data. And, you know, it can be done without setting off a bunch of alerts, and, you know, tracking your logs is more difficult and things like that. So the, you know, if you backed up all your data, that could be okay, as long as that backup data is isolated. But how do you really know what's what? How do you really know what truth is? And I mean, I don't want to give any bad guys ideas. Hopefully they don't listen to your podcast like the rest of the world. But, you know, is it it's harder than some attacks, easier than others.
What's interesting about actually you don't set off alerts for like taking the data, because I have heard an opinion that actually you almost don't want to be too secure, because if you're too secure, you kind of burn the house down on your way out to cover your tracks. And actually, like, I'm not sure how much I agree with that, but it's an interesting concept.
I think that is only a concern by some very, very, very sophisticated organizations that say, all right, if we are very specifically targeted, someone's going to have to create a lot of damage in order to attack us. Right. You know, they'll have to break through the wall in order to get in, because we have bars on all the windows and we have, you know, triple locks on the doors and all that. And so you do open yourself up to having your wall broken. I think for most organizations and the vast preponderance of organizations, they're pretty far removed from that concern. Right. It's about getting a proper lock on the side door.
All right. Well, this was super interesting, I think, to hear about, you know, what does an entrepreneur in residence mean to everyone, hopefully sharing the excitement that I have for Surefire and, you know, maybe sharing some of your knowledge, which is always impressing me. So thank you.
It's been a pleasure, Carla. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.